The issues that matter most, right here. The Drew Mariani Show
on Relevant Radio.
You guys want to talk about water?
Yes.
When the federal government said the states that rely on water from the Colorado River must come up with a plan to cut between 2 and 4 million acre feet of water, our state's response was, in effect, it's not a problem. The lower basin states need to do all of that cutting.
It's because we can't do anymore. There's a few things that might tweak that by a few acre feet, but not in an area that can actually make a difference. California needs to step up and do more. They're doing absolutely nothing. What I have advocated for, they've got the Pacific Ocean right there that they can draw from, and desalinization could help to solve a lot of issues for all of us here in Colorado and the other states.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Yeah, this is a story I continue to follow for you. Honestly, I have some great concerns and some great reservations about what our country is experiencing right now when it comes to drought. Good afternoon. I'm Drew Mariani. It is good to be with you today. I'm so grateful to be able to sit behind the mic again and give you a look at life you're not going to find anywhere else. We've got a lot to get into. And happy All Hallows Eve, right? Where it's a great day. We'll talk a little bit about how to make this day holy again. It has been somewhat co-opted. We'll take a look at annulments, too, and talk Tom Brady, who's actually a Catholic, and his divorce from his supermodel wife and where all that's leading. So we got a lot to get into today. You're welcome to join me anytime. You can try to use this number. It's 888-914-9149. 888-914-9149. Try to get through if you can. Let's talk to drought for a moment here. And look, I hope you pray for America. I hope you pray for this country. You know, I do because of the divide, the political chaos, the rejection of God, the lack of faith that I sometimes see. And it's easy to say, oh my gosh, things are bad. But we're the greatest nation on the planet, period. We really are. And we have been blessed from sea to shining sea. And we need to turn to God, thank him for his mercy, and really entrust this great nation. I believe America has been assigned by God a great role for the future. I do. I think we are to lead the world. And I think fundamentally it should be spiritually first, everything else, technologically, militarily, economically, all those things that follow. Unfortunately, we are really beginning to abandon those Christian roots of ours. But when I see stuff like the drought in the Southwest, it makes me want to pray, like me dropping, you know. We need to pray, ask God for mercy on this country. You know, the drought in the Southwest is causing the federal government actually to looking at placing mandatory water restrictions. So the Bureau of Reclamation, they actually told seven states that to take water from the Colorado River, you need to negotiate a plan amongst yourselves to reduce your own water consumption. But they missed the August deadline for doing that. And according to Reuters, Lake Mead was at 29% of the capacity as of Friday, 29%. Lake Powell's at 24%. I mean, go online. Do yourself a favor. Take a look at those lakes when they were full. Take a look at where they are right now. We know dead bodies are showing up in the bottom of these lakes, right? There are sunken boats, all sorts of stuff that have, you know, surfaced. If they fall much lower, they're not going to be able to generate hydroelectric power for millions. We talked about what that might mean. Brownouts, blackouts, right? The river supplies water for about 40 million people, as well as farms. And that's a point that gives me pause, too. I mean, we take for granted the abundance that we have in this country. We do. I do. I got to be honest with you. I take for granted everything I have in this country, and it's tragic. And I got to thank God all the more. I really do. Take a minute and thank God for what you have, for the water, for the food, for the security, for the economy. I know you might say, oh, economy's like, our economy's doing much better than most nations. But, you know, I'm worried about the future of food in this country. You know, if this water supply, which, as I said, feeds about 40 million people, as well as farms that grow crops for just about the entire country, if it's only providing about two-thirds of the amount of water that a century-old agreement had assumed it would be able to provide, then we got a formula for problems. The Bureau has given the states until December to reach an agreement. If they don't, then the Bureau is going to impose mandatory cutbacks. So I hope the states will get their acts together and figure out what they're going to do. We'll say, as I said, pray. Pray for our leaders. Pray for our country, too. All right? Pray for this great nation of ours. I don't know if you heard this story, too. I want to share with you something that came across my radar regarding Supreme Court Justice Amy Coney Barrett. People often say, beware when people say, yeah, I believe in freedom of speech. That means, they don't believe in it, right? Like 500 people who work in a book publishing industry, they signed a letter to Penguin Random House. It opens with these two sentences. Listen to what they wrote, right? These members of this publishing house. They said, quote, as members of the writing, publishing, and broader literary community of the United States, we care deeply about freedom of speech. We also believe it's imperative that publishers uphold their dedication to freedom of speech with duty and care. Okay. That sounds great, right? Did you get that, though? They didn't put a but in there, but it's implied. Did you pick that up? They're upset, and I'll tell you why. Because Random House is planning to publish a book written by none other than one of our Supreme Court justices, and a good one at that. I love Justice Amy Coney Barrett. Good Catholic woman. I have no idea what her book is about, but these people claim that because she voted to overturn Roe v. Wade, that Random House shouldn't publish her book. Where's freedom of speech in there, right? Where's respect for differing views and positions? You may not like what Amy stands for, so you want to censor her? That's what you call censorship. And it's something that book publishers should, of all people, right? They should not be enduring. Here's a little from Chris Cuomo. Reading from this open letter to Penguin House, or Penguin Random House, listen.
This open letter to Penguin Random House Publishing to pull the book deal for Justice Amy Coney Barrett. Why? 250 literary figures signed a letter asking for her $2 million book deal to be killed, saying the following. Now I'll read it slowly. As members of the writing, publishing, and broader literary community, we care deeply about free speech. We also believe that it is imperative that publishers uphold their dedication to freedom of speech with a duty of care. What does that mean? Here's what it means. We recognize that harm is done to a democracy, not only in the form of censorship, but also in the form of assault on inalienable human rights. Barrett is free to say as she wishes, but Penguin Random House must decide whether to fund her position at the expense of human rights in order to inflate its bottom line or to truly stand behind the values it proudly espouses to hold. We cannot stand idly by while our industry misuses free speech to destroy our rights. So misusing free speech means when someone publishes a Supreme Court justice whose decision you didn't like, Penguin can only publish what it agrees with? Is that where we are?
I agree. It's ridiculous. It's absolutely ridiculous. We'll see how this all shakes out, okay? We'll see what happens here. But I'd fire every one of those people. You should not be publishing. You should not be the one. You should not hold that position if that's your worldview when it comes to freedom of speech. Hey, one other story that I am always bringing before you is the attack on our church, right? The acts of vandalism and violence that we're seeing. Here's another one for you, just to let you have a sense of what's taking place. On Friday, somebody threw a wrench through the front window of the Cardinal Archbishop's residence in New York City. And CBS2 reported that the attack happened around 2:45 Eastern time, though it's not clear at the moment if Cardinal Dolan was being targeted. He wasn't home at the time. Here's a little from Eyewitness News in New York.
In the past 30 minutes, police have released video of a man breaking a window at Cardinal Timothy Dolan's residence. You can see the man reach into his pocket and nonchalantly throw a wrench at a door. The incident happened this afternoon. The man got away. The NYPD's Hate Crimes Task Force now investigating. The residence attached to St. Patrick's Cathedral. The Cardinal was not home at the time.
Oh, thank God. But look, we'll see. Again, more acts of vandalism against the Catholic Church. The Catholic News Agency was reporting that the Catholic population in Canada, that's declined by almost 2 million people in the last 2 years. I just sit back on this, and I'm seeing Catholics leave the faith here in the country. I'm seeing them leave it here in Canada. We're seeing attacks on people of faith and those who support life. We're seeing vandalism against the church. It really is. It's tragic. I'm proud to be Catholic. I hope you are. I hope you know that you are with the church that Jesus Christ himself established. You know, pray for our brothers and sisters in Canada. The Canadian census found that religiously unaffiliated people now outnumber Catholics in what used to be a very Catholic country. And the latest figures compiled last year show that Catholic Canadian populations decline now just about under 11 million. That's not good. As we lose Catholics, I think we become weaker as a country, right? When we lose those who are able to receive the sacraments, who are receiving the grace that comes from them. I don't think the country is a stronger place. I think it's a weaker place. Only 53% of Canadians now even identify as Christians. That's tragic. A decline from 67% 10 years ago, 77% at the start of the century. So we are seeing this decline. You know, and I don't have an answer for how it ends. I always like to look at things almost like a pendulum can only swing so far. Then it's got to come back, right? So defund police had gone so far, and now you're seeing it begin to swing back. But this is a little bit different. This is very much a spiritual thing. This is very much an attack on family, and it's an attack on the church. And I'll tell you who's delighted over it, Satan. He is absolutely elated. When you are able to draw people away from God, when you're able to draw them away from a relationship with him, especially from the sacramental life that the church offers, it's a victory for him. It really is. So, look, do your family a favor. Make sure your kids are well-formed. Practice the faith. If you've been away, get to confession. If you're not receiving the sacraments, get there. It's very easy to get out of the habit of going to Mass on Sunday. It's very easy to get out of the habit of going and receiving, you know, the sacrament of reconciliation. Who wants to do that, right? It's not a pleasant experience all the time. That's what Satan wants you to think. But when you walk out of there, you feel like a new person. I'll tell you what, and you're stronger for it, and your family will be stronger for it as well. Maggie and I were having a conversation. Maggie's getting married coming up and recently engaged. And Father Robert Altier is a friend of the program. He wrote a book. We had him on the air, oh, I don't know how long ago it was, probably a month ago or so. But he writes in the book how, you know, how two souls are connected, right? And I really believe that. When you become married, you literally become one. And I was saying to Maggie, you know, when I go to confession, when I go to Mass, if I pray my chapel, if I pray my rosary, it benefits my wife as well. And the same is true on her end. So, you know, even though your spouse may not be going, don't stop going. Continue to go. Continue to pray for their conversion. Lots going on. I think part of what's happening here, the media has played a huge, huge role in what we're seeing in terms of attitudes towards the faith, towards God, towards marriage, towards relationships, towards sexual deviancy, right? We've seen this. And I think we've lost a lot of trust in the media. You know, when I was growing up, I went to college, you know, university. I you know, my intention was to anchor television news somewhere. I had a lot of respect for the news. I, you know, kind of had a, maybe an old world view of it. News has radically changed today. And I'm really glad that that's not where God put me. I'm glad he put me here because I have far more influence in terms of being able to shape culture and bring truth to the culture than I would reading off a teleprompter somewhere. But trust in the media in general, it has dropped, right? And you probably have seen this. Do you trust the news? Let me ask you that very honestly. I mean, do you have faith in the news? We look at social media and the algorithms that have been put in place and how they have censored conservative voices. You know, when Elon Musk took over Twitter, people all over the place were saying, oh my gosh, my Twitter account jumped. I've heard people talking about them going up from thousands to hundreds of thousands, depending on the profile of the person. That was all based on algorithms. When Hunter Biden's laptop was coming up and we were on the eve of an election, oh my gosh, the media, especially big tech, didn't want anything to derail their candidate. So they buried it, right? And you saw the same thing, Facebook, Twitter, all these different outlets, censoring, determining who could be on, banning. So when it comes to trust in the media, I'll be honest with you, my trust in it has diminished. I'm being straight with you. I mean, I have to watch multiple outlets and check multiple sources in an effort to say, how much is this true? What's the agenda behind it? You know, who's their parent company? What do they represent? Are they parroting other talking points? So why do you, you know, why do you trust when it comes to the news? As time goes on and the country becomes more politically divided, I think it's a major question. And the public are answering it by saying their trust levels for the media, for major media, it's falling. There's some new reporting out that I just came across. We're going to talk with Paul Glatter about it coming up in just a minute or two. And of course, that's not news, right? After so many incidences where the news media and their partners in the entertainment media got it blatantly wrong, you can understand. You get it wrong once, okay. It's a mistake. Get it wrong twice, okay. You fool me once, you know, shame on you. Right? How's that go? Fool me once, shame on me. Fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice, shame on me. Right? Is that the way it goes? So, okay, you fooled me once. But when you fool me 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 100 times, you know, it's crazy. Absolutely crazy. So it doesn't surprise me that people just don't trust what's being told to them. And that's a tragedy for the country. You know, you got your government, you got your politicians, and they gaslight you all day long. They tell you, they give you lies, right? They tell you things you know are not true. And then the media sometimes will reinforce that and drive it home over and over and over and over and over again. What we haven't seen is who people trust today. There was a recent Pew survey, and it found that for adults that are over the age of 30, okay, they still haven't found a reliable source of information. I'm in that demographic, right? Adults over the age of 30. Maybe you have one. Call in, share with me. What do you consider a really reliable news source? I'm hoping you're saying Relevant Radio. I know some people say, Drew, I've shut off TV news. I turn on Relevant to get the news. I get a top in the bot. I get a top of the hour. I get your news report. You know, you hear from different shows. You get caught up. You get credible guests. You get an honest and ethical and moral perspective. So people over 30 say they haven't found a credible outlet. They still haven't found a reliable source of information. Social media, of course, could be one source. You know, people say that. But now they're remaining skeptical of it because it's a minefield, right? It can really be a minefield. You don't know whether you're getting bots. You don't know what you're receiving. It's tough. It's a tough decision. So where do you get your news from? Are you old school and read only the newspaper? Do you watch the evening news? I mean, the evening news frustrates the heck out of me. I watch, you know, if you watch ABC or NBC or CBS, I remember during COVID, I was ready to pull my hair out watching the formula for the show. I could tell my wife before it came on what the next segment was going to be and what their messaging was going to be. It was almost transparent. It was ridiculous. So for me, that's really frustrating. What about getting your news from social media? Here's a quick clip from Media Literacy on the impact of the internet and now its widespread usage.
More than 4.5 billion people around the world now use the internet. Each minute, over 65,000 photos are uploaded on Instagram and over 1 billion videos are viewed on TikTok every day. On social media, you will find the information of reputable news publications that meet the standards of journalism. But you will also find content from bloggers, opinion leaders, relatives and friends who often present opinions as facts.
All right, so there you have it. Pew survey revealed that for adults 30 and under, more of them are inclined to believe social media rather than mainstream news media. So I don't know whether that's a good thing or not. I would tend it's not. You know, I would hope that your mainstream media would be held to a higher standard, although they're really not. So the difference, it's not huge. It's 6 percentage points, but it's the first time that any age group has done this, where they would rather believe in social media than the mainstream news media. So if people in this group see something false, let's say on Instagram or TikTok or Facebook or whatever, there's a good chance that some of them are going to believe it. You know, they're going to believe it's true rather than false, right? So if they get it from social media, they're going to believe that probably over
over the mainstream media. Yeah, how do you resolve this issue? You know, Professor Paul Glatter is going to join me in a minute. He's a professor of journalism at King's College in New York City, and I've talked to him many times about this. He actually spent years, 10 years, reporting for the Wall Street Journal. I tend to have a lot of faith in the Wall Street Journal. I think they're an excellent publication. Seem to be pretty fair and balanced. I'll give you one other website for Paul Glatter, too, and I'm going to take a break. Maybe we'll come back and talk to him. You can follow him at religionunplugged.org. That's religionunplugged.org. And there are some good news sources out there. But my advice is don't watch just one media outlet, right? Don't. Watch multiple media outlets. And then also understand what their agenda is. You know, who's the parent company? What are they trying to tell you? And here's my filter, okay? This helps me to find out if something is true or not. I put on my Catholic lens. I filter everything through the lens of my faith. When I take a look at these issues, when it comes to sexual ethics, when it comes to indoctrinating our kids with gender ideology, you know, or exposing them to demonology like Disney, or whether or not it's about marriage or life or any of these issues. What are they promoting? How fair is the report? Or can you see beneath the surface that this really is a hit piece, or that they're really advocating for this point, although they're whitewashing it in the paint of journalism, so-called journalism? I think if you really look, you can see. If you look, you can tell. And especially if you say I'm Catholic, here's how I stand when it comes to the dignity of the human person, when it comes to marriage, when it comes to these issues, all right? You know, I think God and country and family are some of the most important criteria we can use in terms of evaluating news, all right? So let me leave it at that. I'm going to take a short break. Did you know today, a couple other things, today's the anniversary of the death of Houdini. Talk a little bit about that. Powerball lottery, $1 billion, we'll get into that. And when we come back, it's the 505th anniversary of the Protestant Reformation. That's right. Somebody once said the world would be a lot better off if Martin Luther didn't do what he did. We'll talk about that and why when I return.
Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio Studio line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/Forrester.
There's a key turning point that happens when someone's proposed, a nephew of an important king who is 6 years old, and he proposes him to be the new Archbishop of Toledo. That appointment would give the Archbishop of Toledo discretion with $10 to $20 million of revenue a year or more. So it was a significant. This see was second only in revenue to the king and queen in Spain. Of course, the queen, Isabella, said no way. And she appointed a very holy Franciscan preacher who started to lead a reform. And this is in the 1490s. So Cardinal Jimenez Cisneros ends up becoming the Cardinal Archbishop of Toledo, and he starts a reform. And that reform does amazing things. And I touch on this because we'll see this is happening even before Luther. And I think a lot of people have the perception, and I know I did before I really studied this, that nobody was thinking about reform except this Augustinian monk named Luther.
This is the Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Yeah, I want to talk a little bit about the Reformation. Today marks the 505th year since Martin Luther nailed his 95 theses on the door of the Wittenberg Castle Church, and this came about as a crisis of faith in then, Father Martin's life. And that crisis carried over to influence the world in a way no one could have predicted. I was talking with Josh Raymond, who is the host of The Inner Life, before the program. He was talking about his show, and he says, yeah, I covered it today. He says, you know, before I ever became Catholic, I read a book, and the guy was looking at it strictly. Without any eyes of faith, just the influence that Luther had on the world. And this guy made the case the world would have been better off if Martin Luther never posted those 95 theses. I know he had issues. You know, there's a lot of different things that were going on in the church at the time. But take a look at how many splinters we have now as a result of it. Look at the persecution that ensued. Look what Henry VIII ultimately did. Take a look at, they even claim perhaps Luther's Reformation somehow influenced even the Nazi party. So a lot to get into. We can talk about it. But what about Halloween?
Did it influence Halloween? Yeah, somebody said to me, how did Halloween, it used to be All Hallows Eve, right? How did it revert back to paganism after the Reformation? How did that happen? And we'll talk about that. Dr. Jeff Gardner is going to be joining me in a little bit, and we'll also talk to him coming up in a few minutes about the Reformation. But there are mysteries about Halloween, why it's like it is today. I mean, is there really an occult underpinning? Does it have any supernatural ramifications? There's a little known fact. You know, Martin Luther, when he nailed those 95 theses, is his argument against Catholicism. That was his, you know, he's making his point there in that door in Wittenberg. On October 31st, All Hallows Eve, 1517. And what happened after he did this? It led, of course, to the Reformation. And then it led to the breakup of Catholicism as Protestantism was born. And then soon what happened, right? You saw Luther's Reformation result, you know, in just splinters into dozens of denominations. Walk your way down from Calvin all the way down to our present day, right? Luther was a former monk and a priest. He preached not only against the sale of indulgences and the corruption in the church, which, by the way, they were real. He had a point, right? But also against the power of priests and the Pope and the saints as intercessors of Jesus. Those were his other issues. But this is crucial, and I'll tell you why. It's crucial, ironically, because it actually helped to, I believe, transform Halloween, the very day, coincidentally, that he nailed those theses. Halloween's an abbreviation or corruption of All Hallows Eve, the Irish way of saying All Hallows Eve, right? It's All Hallows Eve. So that's how you get Halloween out of that, right? So it's called that because it preceded All Saints Day, All Hallows, all right, or All Hallowmas in Old English, the word meant to sanctify. So it's not something that we associate with the 31st of October any longer. You know, that all changed once Protestantism removed the focus on the saints and the holiday reverted to its original paganism. Because Halloween actually dates back about 3,000 years to the Druids, Druid rituals, specifically the pagan Celtic festival of Samhain. And maybe a little bit later I'll dive into this a little bit more in terms of the origins of Halloween. But the point is, when you take your focus off of the saints, right, you take it off what the holiday was really about, All Hallows Eve, does it make any sense? You know, that it won't, you know, of course it makes sense that it'll convert to its pagan origins, right? I'll get into that in a little bit. Dr. Jeff Gardner is going to be stopping by. I want to get him on today because I only have a few minutes here with him. And I want to get his take on what Luther perceived as the real problems within the church. It's been 500 years, right? Why couldn't we have just bridged that gap, remedied the problems that were there? That's not the case. Take a look at the division in the church today. We'll go back to Germany one other time, right? There's a Catholic synod going on right now. It just struck me. I was just thinking about this. Look at the dysfunction in that Catholic synod, right? If what they want is able to persist, it would basically eliminate any differences between Catholicism and Lutheranism. I think, you know, forgive me, and maybe I'm going to speak out of school right now. I don't think that's a God. You know, I think there's a dark force behind that. You can't whitewash the differences. If one church says sola scriptura, while the real church says, no, we need sacred tradition as well, you just can't sweep that under the rug. You also just can't sweep away things like sola fide, right? Or predestination, or the authority of the Pope, or the difference between transubstantiation and consubstantiation. I know those are big terms. We're going to get into them for you. We'll break it all down. So there are some who celebrate this, but the Reformation, I think, brought about a real, real decrease in the influence in the church in the world today. So where do we go? Where are we today? What can we learn from the past? What are we seeing today? Dr. Jeff Gardner's been a friend of this program for a long time, a colleague of mine at Relevant Radio when I first joined this network, and he has been helping Christians in the Middle East now for years. Grab a pen and paper. I'll get you his webpage as well. We'll get you connected to his wonderful work. Doctor, good to have you back. Good afternoon.
Hey, Drew. Thanks. Always good to be here with you.
Now, I'm glad to have you on. I know you teach church history, a lot of other history. You are a Mormon. You converted as well. I'm not, Jeff, forgive me, or doctor, forgive me if I don't get
the transition right? I know you went from Mormonism. Did you go to Protestantism before you made it to Catholicism?
You know, I did not. I spent, you know, almost the better part of a decade as an atheist, sort of, you know, what I like to say, an opportunistic agnostic. It just depended on how the day was going, you know, whether I felt I needed to put those prayer coins into the cosmic vending machine to get what I wanted, which is the case with really a lot of people that are, you know, that claim to be atheist or agnostic. So some of the, you know, the some of the things that drove me, pushed me away from Mormonism were even more pronounced among evangelicalism, and that was the tremendous emphasis on emotive expression, that is, emotion as a way to test the validity of faith. And that's very, very much a part of Mormonism, what you feel about X, Y, and Z. And I'm not discounting the role of feelings and how we navigate life. In fact, there's a lot of good work on emotional intelligence. Mm-hmm. But to test the validity of something, especially something you're so far removed from, that is, you know, is this book true? Do these scriptures speak truth? Using emotion just didn't seem to be the way to go for me. So I really did not. I did not spend any time as an evangelical, you know, or anybody on the sort of the Protestant side.
That's interesting. Well, it's good to know. Let's talk about the Reformation. What did Luther get right? What did he get wrong? Maggie, my producer, and I were talking. I guess with Jeff Cavins a little bit earlier. Maggie, why don't you open your phone and share what you shared with me or your mic? What you shared with me a little bit earlier about this not really being a reformation. You know, you leave your marriage because it's not working out. You don't get divorced because you want to reform the marriage, and that's what we saw Luther do when he left. But you want to make the point that Jeff made to you today?
Well, earlier when I was talking with Jeff, he said that that he would call that a revolution and not a reformation.
Yeah, I think it's a good point. And Jeff, you probably would agree with that too, right? So let's talk about the revolution. Or the Reformation, however you want to look at it, 505 years ago.
Yeah, and I think, you know, I mean, you know, currently, I mean, I have a background and a degree in medieval history, though I picked up a second doctoral degree in communication and you know, how that works in our modern world. And so I spend now my time teaching that. And the use of language is tremendously important. So this is, you know, that's a different discussion. But we really ought to say, without any animus towards our Protestant brothers and sisters, that what we have here, what we had, what went on, was a revolt, not a reform. Because you don't reform something that you leave. You don't reform something that you say, well, this is not valid, was never valid, was foisted upon us, was, you know, crushed down. And this was Luther's view of the church. In his time, this was something that was oppressive, that had been laid on top of people as a great burden, and he you know, fancied himself as this great liberator that was coming forward to take this burden off, and that's simply not historically accurate. That's just not true. So I think the language is tremendously important beyond, you know, sort of how many angels are dancing on the head of a pin, these kind of little needly points. It really is a big deal to get this wording right.
Yeah, no kidding. So it's been 500 years. This is arguably the biggest schism in church history. We saw what happened after he posted his 95 theses. You saw what happened in England. You see what happens today with all the different splinters. Have we learned anything in that time? Was there some other way that this could have been resolved? And how do we correct the damage that has been done now over a half a millennium?
Wow. You know, first, let's start with that last question. I don't know, at least within our lifetime, that we do by way of correcting the forces that not just brought Luther as an individual forward, but those who backed him. They were centuries in the making. As you mentioned, yes, there were problems, a lot of problems within the Catholic Church, but there were also a lot of benefits that European society was reaping. And what Luther did in posting these 95 theses, and he was a very, very particular individual, but what he did is he in many ways gave additional justification for what had been a longstanding pattern amongst European political powers, and that is a reason to oppose and in many instances fight one another. I mean, what gets left out of the story of the Protestant Revolution was the absolute just chaos that was turned loose on the continent. And there was nearly, quite literally, 100 years of nonstop war among the European powers, at the center of which was the justification that, well, we're grabbing this land or we're expanding our territory because of our religious differences. Now, Europeans have mastered the art of cutting each other up into pieces with all sorts of excuses for doing that. So I'm not pointing the finger and saying Luther and the Protestants turned loose this violence. No. But they gave a quasi-belli to European powers. And so the consequences of which were absolutely catastrophic for the European, for European society, and extremely consequential for the rest of the world. So how do we go back? I don't know that we do within our lifetimes, even within this century and another century. But how do we go forward? Well, we go forward by, you know, look, let's just start and take Luther at the starting premise. Let's go back to Scripture. Let's go back to the documents that we have access to that he didn't, that clearly point over and over and over again in whatever language you want to look at them in, whether it's ancient Hebrew or Greek or Aramaic in some rare instances. What did Jesus mean when he said, Simon, son of Jonah, Simon Bar-Jonah, you are Petrus? What did he mean by that? What did he mean by upon this rock, right, I build my church? Not churches, not 35,000 distinct Christian denominations and counting that we have today. That's not what he meant. So if we're going to, you know, a place to start in a pastoral conversation, yeah, sure, I'm all about sola scriptura. And sola scriptura quite clearly points to the existence of the sacraments, the foundation of the church as Peter as first among equals, the succession of the apostles, the apostolic succession that we have now down through the bishops. All of those are grounded in Scripture. So as Catholics and talking to our Christian brothers and sisters, you know, a way forward might be, first of all, you know, Catholics to meet them where they're at. And we could, I think, admittedly, as Catholics, spend more time with Scripture outside of Mass.
No doubt about
it. The way we approach it in Mass is, let's acknowledge, a little disjointed. You know, cycle A, B, and C, and where are we jumping around from, you know, the Old Testament readings to what letter, to who, what? What's the gospel? Okay. Yep. That tends to decontextualize it, which makes it hard to see the whole. Right. All right. Let's look at it in the whole. Let's get back and read our Bibles. So that would be a good place to start.
My guest today, if you're just joining us, Dr. Jeff Gardner, taking a look at the Protestant Reformation. It's actually the anniversary of the Reformation. So on this day, 505 years ago, that Martin Luther made that fateful decision. And Doctor, you know, there was somebody who was saying to me, one of my colleagues here, he did a piece on the Reformation a little bit earlier, and he was saying to me, you know, before, and he's a convert to Catholicism, he says he read a book, and a guy says, I'm taking the faith totally out of this. I'm just looking at this from a historical perspective. He said, the world probably would have been better off if Luther never did this. Yeah, he said if he'd never been born, but I think if he never did this, it was his case because of all that followed, not only the splintering, but you take a look at the division in the world, you take a look at the persecution. He even says, you know, the Hitler and the Nazis were somewhat influenced by this. I'm not quite sure what the case is there because he was walking out of the studio when he made that case. But your thoughts on that? I mean, the world would be, if you think about it, the world would be a radically different place. Yeah, you know, we wouldn't have the thousands of different denominations that are out there. And so much of the destruction of churches, beauty, history, that probably would have still been preserved. But your thoughts, let's go back. If Luther found some other way to remedy his situation and not revolt, what do you think the world would be like? What would the church be like today?
Yeah, you know, that's a really interesting question. I mean, I would tend to agree. on balance, if Luther had not done what he had done, you know, things could be better. Now, in terms of the line between, say, Luther and what happened in Germany in the early 20th century, I believe the individual is probably referring to a theory, excuse me, put forward by perhaps the foremost scholar on Luther, an individual whose last name is Obermann, O-B-E-R-M-A-N. And his book is called Luther, Man Between God and the Devil. It is actually very accessible. It's a very scholarly, very dense book, but it's very readable. And Obermann, Heiko Obermann, he was a German, he makes the case that when you subjugate the church to the state, which is what Luther did under his system, he removed the authority of the church as a check and balance to the state, which is what had existed in Europe prior to the Protestant Revolution. When you subjugate the church to the state and you put the state in charge, then you simply by default begin to erode away the balance of power and the importance of religion, and the religion becomes the state, which is what Nazi Germany was. So that's, you know, that's his theory, particular to what happened with the Germans. If Luther hadn't have done what he had done, what would be some of the potential, you know, differences? Well, number one, we would not have had the theocracy that was Protestant England. We wouldn't have had a merging, a fusing of, if you're not Anglican, you're not with the crown. And if you're not with the crown, you're a traitor.
Yeah.
And that was the heart of the American Revolution. They got so frustrated being held at arm's length.
True.
As the colonies filled up with people who were other denominations besides Anglican, a lot
right.
of them.
Right.
So, you know, it may not have led to the same forces that birthed this country, right. minus the rise of theocracies, which, by the way, are always a bad idea. On the other hand, having that balance of power, you know, people talk about our check and balance system.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Catholic Europe had that from its inception. The church was an authority, had its own courts and its own system that you could appeal to as an individual, and then the state was.
Yeah.
The problem was these competing powers were always pulling on the people who were caught in the middle. And that's perhaps the motivation, the real main driving force behind what Luther did.
Yeah.
Perhaps, you know, the middle path would have been something that we have now, where religious liberty was respected.
Yeah.
But there was a sovereignty of the law and not a competition between the two forces. Maybe that would be, pardon me, how to split the baby.
I like
and avoid the problem.
Yeah, I got it. Hey, doctor, hold the thought. I got to take a short break. I'm up against the clock. When we come back, we'll talk more. We'll get some final thoughts from you as well. The Chaplet of Divine Mercy is also about 12 minutes away. What a great day to pray. We'll pray in particular for unity amongst churches and wherever there's division, ultimately for truth. I'll be right back.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
You know, we receive over a million prayer requests every year, thanks in part to the Catholic Order of Foresters studio line, helping us stay connected to your intentions. Learn how our sponsor could support your family with life insurance at relevantradio.com/Forester. An Illinois Life Insurance Society, not available in all states.
I'm a fan of yours. I listen to your replay at night on the Relevant Radio app.
It's the Drew Mariani Show.
Working graveyard as a mail handler.
On Relevant Radio.
Maggie, I love that. That's George. That is George. The voice. I was actually on a pilgrimage recently, and this overnight mail handler actually took the trip. I felt terrible for him. He missed his flight. He had such an ordeal. I'll have to share that story. But George, if you're listening, big shout out to you and to your brother. It was great, great meeting, and thanks for listening. Thanks for supporting. The Chaplet is coming up in about 8 minutes. We'll join that. And if you're just joining me, I'm speaking to Dr. Jeff Gardner today. We're talking about the anniversary of the Protestant Reformation. Yeah, I began the conversation also just talking about saints. You know, if you don't have the saints, if you don't have a belief in saints, then it's very easy to get back to the pagan roots of what Halloween is all about. It's no longer All Hallows Eve. Speaking of that, a quick programming note before we jump back into our conversation. November 1st, all right, tomorrow, I hope you'll join us for what's going to be an extraordinary lineup. We are changing things here at the network and in our broadcast day from sunrise to sunset.
We are going to devote the entire day to the great men and women who have inspired us to live lives of holiness. They lived lives of heroic virtue. That's what you're called to do, too. So we're going to be hearing from everyone from St. Paul and St. Teresa of Calcutta to little-known martyrs that you may never have heard of. And just be prepared to be inspired and to learn and to just have a really unique day of programming tomorrow. So tell others about it. RelevantRadio.com. Great way to get plugged in. Our mobile app, of course, a station you're listening to us on. So great stories about great saints coming your way now in just hours. So get set for it. Joined once again, as I said, by a longtime friend of mine, Dr. Jeff Gardner. And Doctor, I was thinking of you. I was in the Middle East. I went to the Holy Land and some Palestine, and I've seen the persecution of Christians, and the amount of Christians in the Middle East is dwindling. It really is quite tragic. You talk about the attack on the church and the division that came from perhaps the Reformation, but I'm thinking of what's going on modern day as well. What's the latest? Have you been back there lately? And maybe you can paint a quick picture for everyone as to, how Christians today really are suffering.
Yeah, I was in the Middle East in July, and then again in August. I'm looking at another trip to not the Middle East, now to Central Asia, to the Afghanistan, yep. Pakistan area. I can't give a lot of details about that for some security reasons. But the good news is economically things are starting to pick up. The bad news is, though, in terms of religious and civic life, Christians are excluded, and the work of the Islamic State and defeated as they needed to be in respect to sort of pushing the Christians out, it had that similar effect to National Socialism that swept across Europe and the Jewish population within Europe. A similar phenomenon has unfolded in the Middle East, and there is a dramatic, by 60%, 70%, 80% drop in Christians, because they fled, they've immigrated, they've gone to the United States, to Canada, to Australia, different countries in Europe. So it just was not it's not been a happy ending.
Yeah. Hey, some final thoughts on Halloween and the Reformation. So I don't want to blame Luther for it all. An entire culture really has transformed the holiday. In fact, Protestantism spawned movements that in some case would really brilliantly approach the very issue of spiritual warfare. Today's the charismatic or the Pentecostal faction of Protestantism that speak the loudest against the darker side of the holiday. But in general, the fruit of division was not good. Halloween's fall from the eve of All Saints to focus on the dark side of it. That's where we are today in the culture. We dismissed praying for souls in purgatory, and the dead roam the earth, believe the Celtics at the time, and we see how that theme has now, the theme not only has returned, but is growing at a time when we should be in, where people should not be dabbling in the occult. People are now trying to communicate with these souls, and we've really lost our focus and have kind of gone into areas that I think are spiritually dangerous for a lot of people. It's become an occult holiday in some respects, but your thoughts on that?
First of all, I agree. One of the great contributions of the Catholic Church throughout the ages is where we saw this especially in the early days of the Church. Wherever the Church went, it was very careful and very deliberate about absorbing existing cultures and customs, because these are when you get a cultural momentum behind something within a people, just making it disappear is very, very difficult. And what the Church did a tremendous job of, and we can take an example from that page, is that when you find yourself in what is now, in many ways, an alien landscape to Christians, we're living in a post-Christian era, then the question becomes, how can we take what's being done, not absorb it in the sense that we emulate it, but look at it and then reflect it back to those doing it, saying, you know what? Okay, you have a tree at the center of your worship, but you know what? You know who gave his life for you on the tree of life? That was Jesus Christ. Amen. And so Christmas tree gets absorbed into the observance of, really starts with Advent and then goes up to the winter solstice and then to the Mass of the Christ Mass. It all gets absorbed.
Okay. So we you know, Catholics in the Catholic Church has done a terrific job of that. So within our family, for instance, we celebrate saints' days for our children with the same joyousness that we celebrate their birthdays. And they're all now out of their teens and into their 20s, but still we give them gifts, we make a special dinner, we sit down, we talk about their particular saint. That's so awesome. We can do these things all throughout the year to absorb what is now really, as you mentioned, and I think it's even there's even another element here. It's a commercialized, demonically focused culture. That's our challenge going forward as Catholics. That's our challenge going forward as a church. How do we take these things in and reflect them back to the people in a way that explains the proper ordering of the universe, which is really the point of the faith? Who are we? Why are we here? And how do we reconnect with God, the Father, and the Holy Spirit, those ones that created us, that vivified us with life when we were just dust?
Amen to that.
In the first place.
Amen to that. Hey, doctor, thank you. I've got to take another short pause. I'm going to be praying the chaplet. I'll remember your intentions and your family in our prayers. Thanks for all you do. People want to follow your work very quickly. What's the best way to connect?
You can always reach out to me at picturechristians@gmail.com.
Awesome. I'm Drew Mariani. Stay with me. The chaplet of divine mercy is straight ahead.